Share very much your presence this morning. And all of those who are visiting with us, we here at Grissom Road welcome you into our company. We are mindful that you've made a choice to come and be a part of our service this morning. It is my hope and my prayer that your time will be well spent, that you will benefit spiritually by coming here and singing praises to God and praying to God and studying from His Word. I want to remind you that you have a responsibility to know the truth. You're going to be held accountable for the things that you believe in, the way that you live your life, the faith that you have. And so you need to study, you need to make sure that your faith is based on God's Word. You know, I believe that college sports are more entertaining, more exhilarating, more fun to watch than professional sports. And I believe the team that you ought to watch most would be A&M. You know, the food group that I enjoy the most, the one I believe that we all ought to eat, is cheese. Not dairy, but cheese. Cheese is so good it ought to be its own food group. My favorite TV show probably is Criminal Minds. I believe that it's better to wait for the movie than read the book. I believe that Genesis chapter 1 and talking about the 6 days of creation means a literal 6 days. I believe in a God. You know, everyone believes something. And based on some of the things that I talked about early, you understand that what one believes may be subjective and may not even really matter that much in the scheme of things. But we all have convictions. We all believe something. We believe something about origin, do we not? We believe something about God, about our purpose here in this life. We believe something about religion, about right and wrong, about authority, spiritual authority. So we believe something. And we recognize that whatever it is we believe, we do so because we think it is most reasonable. We think that it has the evidence or the evidences to back up our conviction. But what about these evidences? Where do they come from? Do they really give us a foundation for the things that we believe in? Because the truth is, many people believe that we are the result of some big bang that took place. Some people believe that we are the result of an evolutionary process that began way back when with a single cell. Some people do not believe in God. Some people believe that the only purpose we have in being here really is to enjoy life, to get the most out of it we can, to be self-fulfilled. Religion, well, whatever you want to be. And you can certainly have the religion of atheism if that is your choice. Right or wrong, well, it's all relative. There's really nothing inherently right or wrong in and of itself. Authority. Well, there's no authority really higher than myself when it comes to my life. We grudgingly will give in sometimes to an authority of a civil government or of an authority in business because we recognize that we have to work or that we are citizens of a country. And again, people form these conclusions based on certain evidence. I was reading something that has to do with critical thinking and being skeptical. And this is entitled, skeptical parenting, raising young critical thinkers. And this particular lady acknowledged that she was an atheist. She wasn't raised an atheist, but she became an atheist. And she came to the realization that while she was an atheist, she really didn't understand anything much deeper than the fact that she didn't believe in God. She really didn't understand the principles of critical thinking, of what it means to be a skeptic. And so she began to search these things out. And I want to read a part of what she said. I began to listen to the show, to the now defunct show, Penn Radio. One of his guests, Phil Platt, the bat astronomer, after hearing Phil on the show, I went to his blog and was hooked, with Penn and Phil acting as the gateway drugs of skepticism. Now, this Penn is the same Penn of Penn and Teller. Very good magician, comedian, highly intelligent, but someone who does not believe in God and is very outspoken. And so this lady, in order to begin to understand and realize what it means to be an atheist, what it means to be a critical thinker, began to listen to Penn and another gentleman by the name of Phil. I quickly found myself needing harder and harder fixes. I listened to Point of Inquiry and read the blog of P.Z. Myers and devoured the writings of both Richard Dawkins and Neil Gracie Tyson. Ultimately, I went to the source of love and appreciation of science and critical thinking for many of us in the movement, the works of Carl Sagan. Now, if you know anything about these men or any of these men, you know that they are hardcore atheists. And they do everything they can to make anyone who believes in God feel foolish, feel stupid. That's their belief. That's their core value. Richard Dawkins, for example, is the author of The God Delusion, if you've ever heard of that book. I have that book. It is a vile book. You see, what happens is we look around and we see people with so many different views and beliefs and convictions. And sometimes we can become confused. Not over trivial things that just really don't matter, but over serious things, important things. And we begin to listen to all of this evidence, and we begin to question our faith. What I want you to understand is that there's a whole lot out there that's being touted as evidence that just simply doesn't make it so. The conclusions that are being drawn, the statements that are being made, just simply does not make it so. And I've got a list of things. This is going to be a two-parter. We're going to look at part of the list this morning and part tonight. And then next Sunday, we're going to look at some things that really does matter, things that really makes it so. Strong personal convictions. A conviction is simply something that I believe in based on whatever I think to be true, whatever I think to be valid and important. That's why you can have people with such varied and diverse personal convictions. Some that oppose each other even. We're in an election cycle. And we know that Democrats and Republicans, they don't get along very well together. We know quite often independents don't get along well. They see things differently. They have very strong personal convictions. What I want you to understand is my personal convictions, your personal convictions, do not make it so. It's simply what I believe. It's simply the conclusions I've drawn, maybe right, maybe wrong. But so often, when we think about personal convictions, we think, well, this is the way it has to be. How in the world could anyone not like cheese? How in the world could anyone not like Criminal Minds? These are things important to me. These are my convictions. Surely people can see the just reasons for these conclusions. But the truth is, whatever convictions I have come as a result of my own intelligence as I look at information. Bias is certainly a part of it. We all have bias. We are all brought into this world clean and pure. But soon, very soon, we begin to develop biases, prejudice, based on what our parents teach us, based on what we see in the world. And all of these have an impact on the conclusions, the convictions that I have. Strong personal convictions influence what we believe to be right and true. But I want you to understand something. They do not establish what is right and true. The abortion issues. Homosexuality. These are things that are very volatile in our society today. People have strong personal convictions about them. All cannot be right. In the book of Acts, chapter 23 and verse 1, then Paul, looking earnestly at the council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." Now, I want you to know who Paul was before his conversion, before his apostleship. He was Saul of Tarsus. He was a man who actively persecuted the church, did everything he could do to destroy the church. He did not believe in Jesus Christ. He did not believe in the teaching of the apostles. That was his personal conviction. It was strong. He was zealous. But it did not make him right. And we can develop the same kind of conclusions that are strong, conclusions that we think are sensible, and yet they be wrong. And so please understand that strong personal convictions do not make it so. It's just simply what I believe. That's one reason I encourage you every time before I begin a lesson to study for yourself, to think about God's Word, and to understand that you are responsible for the things that you believe in. Things that don't make it so, but what family believes. The lady I quoted and mentioned earlier, her name is Heidi Anderson. And in this article, she talked about the fact that evidently her parents were still believers, and they went, quote unquote, to church. And so when the grandkids visited, she understood that her parents or maybe her husband's parents would take them to church. And so she had to figure out how she was going to deal with it, how she was going to answer the questions. And I'm not going to go into that, but it's sad what she said. But the point is, she has a conviction, and it's strong, and to be honest, she does not want her children to follow a different path. Now, is that really, truly critical thinking? Let me tell you this. Anytime you hear the idea of critical thinking, so often this is exactly what it's talking about. It's talking about the idea of being skeptical about God and the Bible, and it's talking about the idea that if you have any intelligence at all, if you are at all smart, that you would reject God. You would reject the Bible. And so critical thinking to many, especially in academia, has to do with this very point. Only the fool would believe in God. And then, of course, there are families who believe in God, but they do not believe in the right God. Or they do not believe in the God of the Bible. Muslims, you have to acknowledge, can be very, very zealous and believe wholeheartedly in their faith. But family convictions do not make it so. In the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 22, in verse 2 through verse 4, Ahaziah was 42 years old when he became king, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Adaliah, the granddaughter of Omri. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother advised him to do wickedly. Therefore he did evil in the sight of the Lord, like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. And so here you have a mother actively counseling her son, the king, to do evil. I don't know if she thought that she was doing that. I don't know what her heart was. I just know what the end result was. She may have been doing all of this very honestly, very sincerely. Now, if you know anything about her a little bit after this, because her son only reigned 1 year, you know what kind of an evil woman she was. But the point is, you have this man being raised, being counseled by someone who did not believe in the true God, who did not serve the true God. So, what families believe does not make it so. What experts say as true does not make it so. In the book of Matthew, chapter 27 and verse 20, but the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. These were the experts of their day in religion. And they convinced the multitude of people there, you ask for the release of this murderer, of this thief, of this evil man, and you ask that Jesus be crucified. And that's exactly what they did. And the webpage Pathos, talking about atheism, has evolution been proven? So talking about the theory of evolution, quoting, it is extremely robust, talking about evolution, backed by over 100 years of research, experiment, and observation. In all that time, not a single piece of evidence that seriously contradicts any part of it has ever turned up. Within the scientific community, evolution is not at all controversial and is no longer questioned. It is considered to be a fact as simple and indisputable as gravity. It sounds good. And when you hear those who are supposed to be experts say this, when you hear those who are supposed to have the knowledge, the understanding of science, and they begin to talk about all of these discoveries and all of these scientific facts, you step back and say, wait a minute. Is there something to this? And you begin to doubt. I'm reminded of what is said in Psalms 14, verse 1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. I don't care who says they are an expert in this field. Organic evolution, the idea of atheism, all of that slaps in the face of intelligence. First of all, what was said in this article, much of it simply was not true. The idea that in all time, not a single piece of evidence that seriously contradicts any part of it, evolution, has ever turned up is a lie. It is not true. And we don't have time this morning to go through this part by part. But let me say that if you look at the preponderance of evidence, if you put it on a scale, what true science does, it validates God, it validates creation much better than it validates evolution. And let me say this. Talking about the theory of evolution, it is extremely robust, backed by over 100 years of research, experiment, and observation. You cannot, now listen to this, you cannot research, do any experiment on, or observe the process of creation, the process of beginning. Science cannot do this. And to leave the impression that somehow they can do all of these great tests and experiments and observations and prove that, in fact, organic evolution is true is a lie. What academia says, that does not make it so. And I followed up what experts say with academia. Because quite often we do connect the two. Have you ever noticed that many, if not most, of those in public service or in some national or international position of power, that many of them, at least in this country, attended some Ivy League school or some higher prestigious college or university? And they want you to know that. I've got just a few. Hillary and Bill Clinton, Yale Law School. Ted Cruz, Harvard Law School. Bill O'Reilly, Harvard University. Jeffrey Immelt, who's the CEO of GE. Dartmouth College and Harvard Business School. Now there are some who did not attend these schools. But what I want you to understand is that so much emphasis is placed on things like this. Like, because you go to Harvard or because you go to Yale or Dartmouth or one of the other Ivy League schools or because you go to Rice University or something like that, Duke, that surely your education is better and surely you know more and surely you are smarter than the poor person who goes to another university or college. In John 7:46, the officers answered, "No man ever spoke like this man." You see, they were supposed to bring Jesus Christ back. They were supposed to arrest him, and they didn't. And they were being questioned, "Why didn't you bring him back? Why didn't you arrest him?" And this was their answer. Then the Pharisees answered them, "Are you also deceived? Have any of the rulers of the Pharisees believed in him? But this crowd that does not know the law is accursed." You see their pompous attitude? We are the educated. We are the one who knows. We are the academics of our society. You need to listen to us. These people who've not been well educated, these people who've not been well trained, these people who do not know the law, they are accursed. Let me tell you something. Academia has been wrong time and time and time again. Nothing wrong with a good education. And a good education certainly provides many advantages. But just because someone in academia says it does not make it so. Maybe in that same vein, eloquent words and skilled acting. At TEDx New York, a fellow by the name of Will Stephen. Sound smart, say nothing. And I listened to this last night as I was trying to do a little bit more research. It is virtuous nonsense. He's a professional comedian. He studied many, many presentations to figure out just what makes a speaker sound brilliant. Even if their message is not. And the conclusion that he's drawn is it has a lot to do with tone and gestures and pauses and those kinds of things. In other words, it has to do with acting. Knowing how to work a crowd. Knowing how to get a crowd involved. And I listened to about, this was a little presentation that he did at some convention. They brought him in to make this very point. And he spoke for about, I believe it was 5.5 minutes, 6 minutes, somewhere in that area. And he just started out. He told the audience that the place was packed. It was a large room, conference room, and it was packed. And he just told people, I'm going to say a lot of nothing. It's going to sound good. He said, I haven't prepared. I haven't studied. I don't know anything to really tell you in this presentation. It's just a lot of nothing. You know what? I listened to it. And he's right. It was a lot of nothing. And it did sound good. Eloquent words. Nothing wrong with being an eloquent speaker. In Acts 18, verse 24, now a certain Jew named Apollos, born at Alexandria, an eloquent man and mighty in the Scriptures, came to Ephesus. This man became a Christian, and he did much good. He was a powerful speaker, clearly. But then I'm also reminded in Romans chapter 16, verse 18, for those who are such do not serve our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly, and by smooth words and flattering speech deceive the hearts of the simple. If a person is a good orator and a skilled actor can go a long ways in convincing someone. In this passage here in Romans 16, smooth words, that is defined by Thayer as fair speaking, the smooth and plausible address which simulates goodness. And so it makes it sound plausible, reasonable. Flattering speech, there says, fine discourse, polished language, in a bad sense, language artfully adapted to captivate the hearer. Fair speaking, fine speeches. And so don't get carried away with the talents of a person who is speaking. That they may be able to hold large crowds and move them and motivate them. Many a preacher, especially the television evangelists, have become rich beyond belief by their great gift of speaking and acting. And then finally, this morning, what the majority believes doesn't make it so. In the book of Numbers, chapter 13, verse 30 and 31, we have there the story of the Israelites as they come back, the 12 spies, and spying out the land of promise. And 10 had brought back a negative report, and Caleb stands up in verse 30. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. 10 out of the 12 said no. And guess who the Israelites followed? They didn't follow Caleb and Joshua. I wonder how that worked out for them. If following the majority got them where they wanted to be. In the book of Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 and verse 14, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life. And there are few who find it. The truth is, if you want to know what's right, if you want to be able to distinguish between truth and error, the majority is never what you want to follow. Because more times than not, the majority is going to take the easy way out. The majority is going to be wrong. And in fact, when you look at the history of the Bible, never do we find really the majority doing what's right. What do we find in Noah's day in the flood? Did the majority do right? Well, what do we find with regard to Israel even after they had conquered and possessed the promised land? Did the majority of them do right? What about the 10 tribes that went off? even among Judah, the southern tribe. And so truly we understand that the majority, what they say, does not make it so. They may put pressure on us to follow their path, but it doesn't make it right. And so things that don't make it so. Whatever my convictions are, these are not the things that need to affect it. And tonight we're going to continue on with this. I hope that you can come back.